You're listening to another ambitious EntrepreneurNetwork.com podcast, the voice for entrepreneurs and small business. Now, onto the show.
Welcome to Business in Heels podcast, the podcast that inspires and educates women in business globally to succeed. Now over to your host, Anne-Marie Cross.
And welcome to another episode of Business in Heels podcast. This is episode 22. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross, the podcasting queen and creator of Podcasting with Purpose podcast training. We've got a very special guest today, but let me introduce the topic that she's going to be talking about today. Now, despite the spotlight and effort that's been placed on achieving gender equity in the boardroom by governments, community leaders, advocacy groups and the like in Australia, almost 71% of all directors represented on the ASX 200 boards are male. Now, while we often hear about steady progress being made towards a 30% gender diversity target called for by the Australian Institute of Company Directors, according to the Gender Diversity Quarterly Report released by the ACID or AICD, we saw a 2% increase last year. So my guest asked today, where does this leave us another decade or two achieving real equality? We're going to dive into that topic. Now, joining me on today's show is Business in Heels' very own Jo Plummer. She is someone who is passionate about this topic and who herself has sat around quite a number of boardroom tables. Let me just give you a quick overview of her bio. She's the executive director and co-owner of Business in Heels International. She's been a board chair on Barwon Water, Vic Water, Barwon Asset Solutions. She's a committee chair on the Geelong Regional Football, advisory board chair on Deakin MBA, and Geelong committee member on the AICD. So she's got a lot of experience that we can certainly tap into today. And Jo says, if we're serious about achieving true gender equality in the boardroom, and she doesn't mean that respectable 30%, let's all of us who are in position of influence get serious about how we can tap into the right talent. Welcome to the show, Jo.
Hello, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Look, you have got such a wealth of experience and knowledge sitting on boards. And as we said earlier in the introduction, this is an article that you wrote. And I'm sure we can put a link on the show notes so if people can want to access that and read the full article that you wrote, they can certainly do that. But that really, I mean, with all of the diversity and so forth, the topic and the discussions going around the boardrooms, that still is a low, low percent, isn't it?
It is a very low percent. And I think, you know, it's really interesting because once upon a time I was not an advocate of four targets. I think in any well-defined strategy, you can have a target. And if our strategy is to be gender equal across boardrooms, and we know that that gives better results to companies, then we probably do need to put a target on it. And, you know, if we're serious, we need to put the right target on it, which is 50%.
Yes.
I could certainly live with 40, 40, 20, understanding that some boards have, you know, 7 or 9 or 11, but certainly 50-50 is what we're striving for.
Yes. And it's interesting because studies show, and even organisations who do have more of a balanced equity sitting around the table report, you know, greater results because of that, you know, broad discussion that's brought to the table. Yet there's still so few women sitting around the boardroom. What do you see as some of the issues around that? Let's talk about some of the issues and then some of the strategies and things that you see are working so that we can become far more proactive in promoting this and, of course, seeing that women who want to are invited to sit around those tables. So what are some of the things that you see are not working?
Look, I think there's two key things, and one is around women's confidence and not seeing themselves in the boardroom. That's number one. And number two, which is the article that you referred to, I think actually we tend to look for female directors sometimes in the wrong places, and I'll come back to that one. But actually in terms of women's confidence, I think, you know, I reflect on my own journey. And, you know, it's that whole imposter syndrome. How could I possibly be sitting around the board table, and what do I really have to contribute? And depending on what board it is, we all feel that we have to have those really deep specialist skills, and they are absolutely important. There is no doubt about that. But of equal importance is having, you know, that free thought, having a strategic focus, being able to ask those insightful questions at the right time of the right people. You know, and quite often the dumb questions that people often refer to, can give you those light bulb moments. And I think, you know, getting women to really think about why they should be part of a board and how they can go about doing that, giving them the confidence that they are enough, that their experience counts and is enough, is really, really important. And, you know, getting rid of that little doubtful voice in your head and thinking about what it is that you can own and contribute and be really comfortable with that.
Yes.
That's probably the first one.
One of the things I'm going to jump in there, and let's just, I guess, dive a little bit deeper into women. I know we often have that imposter syndrome, or we'll look at a particular, I hear this happen a lot too, and I'm sure this is probably similar to looking at potential boardroom placements, but we look at a job description, and when we don't have two or three, you know, practical experience in certain things, we just take ourselves out of the running. So when you talk about some of those specialist skills, what are some of those specialist skills? Let's list them, because quite often we don't see that what we bring to the table is actually going to be of value, but they may very well sit around some of those specialist skills that you know are so important in someone who is going to be sitting on a board.
So I think it's about, you know, in education, there's this program that's called Recognition of Prior Learning, which can actually accredit you, you know, to achieve certain specialist streams. And I think this is no different. It's thinking about your learning and wisdom and experience and applying that to whatever the situation might be. And often that is equally as valid as the specialist skill itself. Some of the specialist skills that I'm talking about that people are absolutely hell-bent on having is, you know, accounting, finance, economics, law, marketing, you know, those pure streams that are absolutely really important. But they're quite freely available as well. So that's not to discount in any shape or form, you know, the role that those people bring to the table. And from a governance perspective, we need to have a real matrix of skills to make sure that our governance is, you know, dinky-dye and actually is doing what it's supposed to do. But beyond that, if we want to be able to stretch our thinking and be out of the box and dynamic and future-focused, then we need different sets of skills. And even if you apply it to the Edward de Bono's thinking hats, you know, at the end of the day, some of those can be really, really helpful. And, you know, just because it hasn't got a, you know, accounting degree or a really specific degree behind it, you know, we devalue it, and that's not helpful.
No. Now, something that you said earlier was, and I read this from your article because I think it's so good, female SME business owners are often discounted because of the unconscious assumption that society makes. Someone working from home couldn't possibly have the right experience. They play small. She doesn't have the risk appetite, and the list goes on. When I read that, I went, seriously, because when I speak to, and I've spoken to a lot of women in business who do have a home-based office, and some of them are running multi-million dollar global companies, and they do it sometimes in their slippers at their desk that is in their own home. And I think people are just not tapping into the resource, the knowledge and experience these women offer.
And I think that that really takes me to that to that second point that I made. So one is around the confidence, and the other is where are we looking for our female, potential female directors? And we all know that in the past we've all looked to the C-suite. The reality is the number of women in the C-suite isn't 50-50 either.
No.
So if that's where we're fishing for our pipeline of female directors, well, then we're probably never going to get there. So. And that's for lots of reasons. That's probably another podcast in itself, you know, around, you know, why haven't enough females made it into the C-suite? If we take that aside for the moment and think about, well, there are many, many women that have had terrific corporate careers. They may not have been in the C-suite, but they are very well educated, they're clever, they're smart, they're running families as well. And these women quite often have left corporate life because they feel they haven't had the right support, the flexibility, the whatever, and have had really good ideas that they've wanted to turn into their own business. And we know that women starting businesses is one of the fastest growing sectors in the economy. And if we want that to be a really positive effect on our GDP, we need those women to succeed. But what that then tells me is that if that is the fastest growing sector and we know that these women have all of those attributes, not to mention that they are making over 80% of the household purchase decisions.
Yes.
And I don't know about you, if I'm sitting on a product and service board, I want some of those people and their insights on my board table. And so if you think about all of these women, and in fact women starting businesses is a faster growth area than men at the moment, there's a great pipeline of women to choose from in that space, but recruiters are not looking in those non-traditional spaces, and I think we're missing out as a result of that.
Yes. Well, let's look at that. If someone who is actively recruiting to seek board members, how would they go about that? I mean, obviously connecting with an organisation such as yourself, because you've got incredible women who are part of the membership. So how would they go about reaching out, connecting? I'm sure you've got some strategies to support them. And then what I'd love to dive into is maybe for women who may now be thinking a little bit, oh, maybe I could have value to offer. What are some of the things that are discussed typically in the board? Because again, it's kind of, I don't know what they don't know, so I'm not going to put my hand up for something. So maybe you can give some insights into that too. But first, for recruiters, how would they seek out these women who have home-based businesses and have got a, you know, wealth and depth of knowledge to share?
So I think traditionally what they have done is they've engaged in partnerships with large corporations. And, you know, they've got this talent pipeline and, you know, they tend to be the same old people in doing that. I think what recruiters need to do is to connect with more organisations like Chamber of Commerce's who are representing small and medium enterprise. And that's not just for women, but that's for men as well, by the way. So if we know that 97% of our economy is driven by small business, why wouldn't we be tapping into some of that? And of course, the cry for big business to be doing business with little business, so big B to little B and vice versa, then let's infuse our boardrooms with that. So areas like the Chamber of Commerce, I think, is really important. There are other organisations like Business and Heels, like BNI's, you know, Business Networking International groups, and a myriad of others that really foster people who are working in small and medium enterprise. And so again, I think it's about creating those relationships, not just with the C-suite area themselves. So that's really important, but equally important, it's not a one-way street. So if you have an inkling that you would like to potentially help shape the future of an organisation, and there is or you know, a theme or an industry or whatever it might be, then you need to take accountability for that too and think about how you can put your hand up and be considered. And so there's a whole bunch of ways that you could to do that, and there's lots of websites and all sorts of, you know, there's courses that you can do to make sure that you're qualified in that space, which I'm really happy to chat about as well.
Yes. Well, let's maybe some of the things that you did. If we look back to the introduction, I mean, you've been a board chair for a number of different organisations. Take us back to the very first board that you sat on. Was that something that you proactively put yourself forward for, or was it through connections and networks that you'd been building over time and they saw, you know, the skills and experience they'd leverage? What happened? How did that happen for you?
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to be a non-executive director, and so I was in corporate at the time, and my specialist skill, I guess, if you would call it that, is around building really robust business strategy. And that business strategy can be corporate, but it can equally be not-for-profit, government, small, medium enterprise, and I've worked across all of those. But my first gig, so having done the Australian Institute of Company Director program, which is an absolute must for anybody who's serious about doing that. That is probably the most well-credentialed course that you can do in terms of bringing together all of those key areas that board members need to consider and understanding your risk and all of those things. So I have done that. And like most people, I was thinking about, well, how do I get involved at, you know, not-for-profit level first? Now, that's not because not-for-profit areas are less important, but quite often they are, I guess, they're limited by guarantee, so your risk is less, and it gives you an opportunity to give back and really get some runs on the board before you're asking, obviously, for a pay packet to do that. And so my first board role came about through networking, and it was kind of by chance, really. And certainly that board that I went on wasn't, I wouldn't say, a high-performing board. Mm-hmm. So if I look, you know, back to where I was and the dynamics that were at play, it's very different to what I'm now used to. But having done that, I then became a lot more proactive, I think, in that space, and really started getting connected with government and going up and seeing the different departments and looking at what boards were available. You do need to be careful, obviously, not to get lots of little roles that keep you very busy but don't pay you any money.
Yes.
So if you, you know, if you are thinking about doing that for a profession, then, you know, you do need to be careful about that, particularly as women, because we just want to get in and help and nurture. And that's not to say I don't have give back boards. I do. I absolutely do plenty of that. Mm-hmm. But I'm also very clear about the areas that, you know, are income generating and that don't need me to use my skills for free.
Yeah, yeah. Great.
So there's a bunch of places that you can actually put your name down. And if you Google the things like Get On Boards, which is at the Victorian State Government, the federal government have one too, which if you just, again, Google how do I get on a federal board, they'll come up. There's organisations like the AICD that actually have a membership that allow you to apply for those roles. There's another organisation called Women on Boards that you can look at. Another one is Board Directions, and of course LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So you can set up, you know, a job alert for those, and you can apply really easily and do that. Not to mention walking up and down, you know, in Melbourne, it's Collins Street, which is where all the recruiters are, knocking on their door and just, you know, having a coffee and chatting about what it is that you're passionate about, the areas you want to work in.
Yes. Such great insights there. And once you started to familiarise yourself and you'd been on a couple of boards, I'd imagine that that experience and the networking that you continue to do would then bring more opportunities across your desk, so to speak, that that you then said yes to and so forth. Is that because that's the kind of thing that often happens, isn't it? Once you start to become known and you start to contribute, your reputation starts to go amongst the circles that you want to continue to network in. Is that sort of how the other board and committee chairs and those kind of things came up for you?
Yes and no. So in part, and then of course, you know, it's getting harder and harder. Networking is really important because what it will do will either get you a seat to the table in the first instance.
Yes.
Or it will, you know, it'll pique your interest in something. So someone will have said something or talked about it, and I'll be like, oh, I want to find out more about that. But actually, and if it's not done this way, I would question whether or not I actually wanted to sit on that board. Most boards today are very professionally governed. They are very clear on the skills that they need, and some of the more contemporary governance requirements, like having a gender diverse, a culture diverse, an age diverse board, you know, making sure we've got the right skills across, et cetera, et cetera, and they are appointed that way. So I might well be a very well thought of business strategist, but at the end of the day, if that's not what they need on their board, then, you know, that's, I should not be placed on that.
Okay, yeah.
And I think if boards don't have that process, then I would question
whether
like,
that
is it. Yeah.
So that's a really good question, and let's just reflect on this. So that's something to be mindful of. If that becomes apparent, then you've got to consider, is this really an opportunity that I want to invest time into? What are some other things that you would recommend as women we look out for? Because if this is happening or not happening, it may not be an opportunity that really will be a win-win-win for everyone.
I think it's like most things, you need to look at risk and reward, and you need to look at why. So why is it, A, that you want to be a non-executive director, and B, why that board, why that organisation? So you need to be confident that, you know, you have a real interest in doing that, because, you know, there is a risk-reward equation that you need to consider, and the risk for most people is pretty high. So we've all heard in the news about, you know, directors, you know, potentially going through the court system and being liable for things that, you know, in reality they probably didn't have that much control over, for all the best intentions and questions and processes and what have you that they, you know, sought to see that was in place. So one of the pieces of advice is make sure you do your due diligence on that organisation.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that there is the right director's insurance, both from an indemnity and liability perspective. That can be quite a minefield. And make sure that you feel that that organisation, you know, have a look at some of the media and Google and see what sort of reputation they have and where you might, because at the end of the day, if you're going to be on the board, you need to be adding value.
Yes.
And at the end of every board meeting, I literally sit down and, okay, how did that go? What value did we add to that organisation that would not have been there had we not have sat around the table for 3 hours and discussed those issues?
Yes.
So, you know, it's really about thinking in that space, but doing it in a really creative way. So a board can get really hung up on ticking and flicking and making sure all of the governance things and the compliance things are sorted,
mm-hmm.
and they are very important. There's no doubt about that. But boards are there also to shape strategy and direct the future of an organisation,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, really live its purpose.
Yes.
And so if you're not dedicating, you know, good amounts of time to that for real discussions, again, I would question the value of having a board checking the checker.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as you're sharing that, one of the key things I would imagine is really important is to make sure that you may have some questions. Is it like, because I've never been on a board where you go through all those processes. I've been on smaller boards with the local community and, you know, with the business owners and council and so forth. So when you go and you approach them, do you have an opportunity to ask questions? So one of the questions that comes to my mind as you're sharing that, if they are about, look, we want to implement some innovations because we want to add value for our, say, business community in this area. If you want to find out, is this really something they want to do, or is it just speak? You know, let's just put ideas on paper, but we're going to house them. Maybe a good question would be, what's the last innovation, you know, project that you drove forward? And if they can't come up with that, then kind of thinking, well, is this just talk around the table? So do you have an opportunity to ask those kind of questions before you say yes?
Absolutely. And everybody should have their own little, you know, check sheet.
Yeah.
I certainly have my check sheet. And one is that, you know, they're financially stable, because the last thing you want to get caught out on is something in that space. But there's also, I mean, the two biggest things I think are culture and strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't feel that the people around the table that you're working with are congruent with, not necessarily what your opinions and thoughts and direction is, but in terms of willingness to be open and explore and get the very best of that positive tension that you can get around a board table,
mm-hmm.
that would be a red flag for me.
Yes.
And so, you know, meeting with the other board directors and understanding a little more about, you know, where their headspace and their expertise and the way they would consider their input, making sure that you meet with the chair, you know, doing your research from a media perspective and saying what, you know, these people are known for, and
mm-hmm.
the good, the bad and the ugly. And it's not to say if there's some bad and ugly that you don't do it, but it's about whether or not understanding you think you could make a difference and fit into that organisation. But culture and strategy are, in my view, apart from the hygiene measures around, you know, governance and compliance, which mm-hmm. are very important, that culture and strategy is the single biggest impact I think a board can have for the future of an organisation.
Yeah, fabulous. And so typically is a board membership, obviously as you're talking about today, typically over a certain time frame, or is that going to vary between board to board and organisation to organisation?
Look, it does vary, and they can be anything from, you know, casual vacancy positions through to termed appointments. So, and generally they go from between 2 to 4 year appointments.
Mm.
Good governance says that you probably shouldn't do any more than 8-ish years on a board,
right.
because
yeah.
it is important, no matter, you know, how good we all think we might be in contributing, fresh ideas are a good thing. And so, you know, in a really good organisation, they would make sure that people's tenure is staggered. As they're refreshing the boards, yes, they might reappoint for another term, but they will alternate and make sure that there is somebody coming in with some fresh eyes at different points in time.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
And what sort of commitment, and I know this is probably, again, different, but I'm sure people who are now considering it's okay, we run busy lives and many of us are in business ourselves. What kind of time, average time commitment, meeting, like monthly? I guess that's going to differ all the time. But on average, what commitment did you find that a lot of your board placements required of you?
Yeah, so there's the board meeting itself, which is generally around 3 hours. Some boards meet for a full day. But if you were meeting monthly, then I would say probably 3 to 4 hours would be enough.
Yeah.
For me, my best boards would meet every second month. And, you know, perhaps sometimes in between we might have different, you know, task force or strategy work days or those sorts of things. But, of course, the really important time factor that often people miss is preparing for those board meetings. You know, when you're getting, well, whether you're getting paid or not, you need to come to that meeting having read the papers, understanding the key issues, really made sure that you've got across any I questions before the meeting as opposed to we questions. So don't waste other people's time around the table asking things that are really just
for you.
Clarification questions. Make sure they're we questions. And, you know, I'll give you an example just coming up. To this last couple of months with financial year end, all of the boards that I am on obviously have a range of compliance things. So I had 2,000 pages to get across. Basically about 10 days. And, you know, that takes a considerable amount of time. That's a once a year event. And again, I would always encourage the boards that I'm on to make sure that their papers are as short as possible. Don't just put the information in so that actually you can never find the nugget and all that sort of stuff. So I would like not to go to meetings that have any more than a couple of hundred pages, ideally. And really the value, again, is making sure that you've got just the right amount of information to be able to ask the right questions and have that discussion at the board table.
Yeah, great. This has been so valuable, Joe. I think just give a, you know, fantastic overview of everything that's kind of involved. So on a personal level, I mean, you're still sitting on boards and going through all of those things that we talked about today. But for you personally and also professionally, what would you say are some of the greatest takeaways, outcomes, benefits, however you want to call it, that you've really gained yourself through sitting on some of these boards?
So there's probably three. One is cross-industry experience. And really, I think in being a really valuable board member, it's good to have different industry experience, because what you can bring to the table is taking the best out of those and applying it to your situation. So I think that's really important. The second one is saying yes and being well networked, because that is how opportunities in all sorts of, you know, parts of your life, whether they're personal things and, you know, things that you might get your kids involved in, through to, you know, looking at your next board role, through to consulting, you know, spaces, things that you can help people with. I mean, I get great joy in connecting someone for, you know, a better purpose with no expectation at all in return, and being able to do that. So I think that is incredibly valuable. And the third one for me is being able to shape the future of an organisation and the impact that it has on the environment around it. And there is no better place to do that from a boardroom. And for me, having got, you know, I have a very strong, I guess, commercial background, but really exploring how I can use that to get the best outcomes from a community perspective, you know, from social prosperity and the environmental prosperity, there is, you know, it's proven to me that there is absolutely no reason why that can't and should not be done. If you want to take a driving role in that, in any industry, then there is deep satisfaction from doing that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And there's nothing better, I think, than to surround yourself with, as you said, other people in different industries with different, well, issues, challenges, but also opportunities. That so often when we're in our own industry, working in our own business, we only see so much. And it's then that we can really adapt and adopt across different industries, as you say. So it will impact the growth in our business too, as we learn, as we hear what other people are doing and reflect and take that back to our own organisations, and vice versa. I think there's a rich depth and wealth of knowledge that is untapped, as we said today. So, Jo, this has just been an incredible interview. I mean, I've learned an incredible amount too, and I know everybody else will too, listening and watching. So just share a little bit as we end the show today, a little bit more about Business and Heels, because there may be some people that are listening today that have not yet tapped into this incredible network. So what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way, if they've not had anything to do with Business and Heels before, or even had, is to jump on the website. There are so many opportunities to connect in different ways. We have three key pillars. One is about connections. The other is about marketing yourself and your business. And of course, our third one is around education. Both Lisa and I, as co-owners of the business, are very, I guess, touchable and contactable. Our emails are not hidden. Our phone numbers are not hidden. And if there's anything that you think we can help you with, drop us a line, give us a call. And get involved. Come to one thing and see what it's about. What does it cost you in the end, really? Just say yes and then see what comes your way.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, once again, thanks so much for sharing your wisdom and knowledge. You are certainly someone that can add value to this, being that you've sat on many boards and committees and so forth too, and of course the spearheading the leadership of the Business and Heels podcast, and also, well, the network. And thanks again for coming on this podcast. And for those of you who have not yet subscribed to the show, go ahead and do that. You can do that with Apple Podcast, the show notes, ambitiousentrepreneurnetwork.com/BIH22, and we'll put some of the links there to the articles and maybe even some of the links to some of the organizations that you mentioned during the show too, Jo, that people can click right through and find out more so that they can better prepare themselves and be knowledgeable on what to do, what to look out for if opportunities come their way to sit on board. So once again, thanks for coming on the show.
My great pleasure. Thanks, Anne-Marie.